Come on to the theater. I'm diddly-dee, an actor's life for me.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 93, Pinocchio. Now that's how you do a Disney sidekick.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Mason Smith, animator hopeful extraordinaire someday. And I'm here with my lovely co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson, who are true animation addicts.
Only the biggest on our show.
Only the biggest. They have the most helpless animation addiction that there is.
Mm-hmm. I have no problem. There's no problem with this.
Acceptance is the first step towards being an animation addict. Anyway, so this is the Animation Addicts Podcast, and as you can probably guess, we are all about animation. In every episode, we pick an animated film, and we go over everything that we can, everything and anything. Here on episode 93, folks, we are reviewing Walt Disney's Studios' second animated masterpiece, Pinocchio. We're going to have a great episode. We are going to talk about some of the awesome production details that went into this film, and then, of course, going through the general story and characters of the film, analyzing them, you know, nerding out over them, and all around just talking about how awesome this film is. And then, if we have time, we'll talk about the live-action remake that's supposed to happen.
Oui.
But you can expect a lot of commentary and full-blown nerdity and trivia and quotes. So strap yourself in. If this is your first episode, welcome, and let's get going.
Like Mason said, this episode we are doing Walt Disney's second masterpiece, Pinocchio. This movie came out February 7th in 1940. And like I said, it was the second animated classic to come out. The first, of course, being Snow White. This came out 3 years later. The studio was Walt Disney Animation Studios. The directors, there were quite a few directors. There were two supervising directors, Ben Sharpstein and Hamilton Lusk. And then the sequence directors were William B. Roberts, Norman Ferguson, Jack Kinney, Wilfred Jackson, and Teehee. So, you know, as I was looking through, you know, the production notes and whatnot, I just found it very, very interesting that there were so many directors listed in this. There were sequence directors and then supervising directors in this film. And this is notably one of the masterpieces of animation. Basically all of the nine old men worked on this film. It just really the culmination of animation happened on this film for the studio, which was great. So going into a little bit more production details, it had a budget of $2.289 million. And then box office, over the years, it has made about $84.2 million. Now that isn't necessarily reflective of the initial release. Initially, they had about a write-off of $1 million. It just didn't do very well. It was kind of the middle of the war. They weren't able to distribute their films overseas. And so this was very heartbreaking for Walt Disney because this movie was so near and dear to his heart, and it was just so good, and it just didn't have the reception or even the, you know, scale or playability that Snow White had, which was very sad. But they were able to re-release it later in that decade, and then obviously the last over the decades, and the last one being in 1992. Very, very prominent. This film has a lot of things that are staples in the Walt Disney Company today. For example, When You Wish Upon a Star is basically the motto or the jingle, the theme song of Disney.
When you wish upon a star.
Yeah. That, when you hear that, you just think everything Disney. I think it has even transcended this movie to just mean Disney.
Absolutely. I mean, you hear it all over the place in the parks, right?
Exactly.
And it's the part of the fanfare when you see the intro to a video release or a theater, you know, in the theater for a Disney film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You mentioned the Nine Old Men. This was actually like the Nine Old Men worked on this, but this was back when they were Disney legends before the Nine Old Men, like proto old men, Nine Old Men. And it's such an interesting piece. And It is a shame about the box office. You know, it cost almost twice as much as Snow White. Like, if Snow White practically bankrupted Walt Disney, then what did this film do to him? This was like twice the gamble that Snow White was. But that's just Walt, you know, in these early years. All these crapshoots and shots in the dark, so it seemed, but it was actually just creative genius waiting to burst forth.
This was such an amazing improvement on the medium of animation, though.
Yeah, wasn't it, though?
They had no walls. They just, like, if we can make it better, let's make it better. And each one was so stuck on becoming the very best and making this the very best achievement that they could, that there was just nothing holding them back. And because of that, it was a huge advancing in the medium period. And, like, think about it. 20 years before this, it was stick figures and rubber hoses for legs and arms and heads traced from quarters and dimes. I mean, this is an amazing leap forward.
Wait, hold on. The ratio of Mickey Mouse's head and ears is that of a quarter to a dime?
That's what they kept saying, yeah.
I wonder if that's just slang or if that's like the magic formula that they like revealed. I'm just kidding. There's nothing to reveal. I'm sure a lot of people know that. I'm just like not in the know about that. I'm going to try it now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Yeah. So I want to go into a little bit about the history of this film, because anytime we do a fairy tale, it seems Morgan, you know, everyone pulls their little piece of carpet square around Morgan, and I open my storybook and I share.
Carpet square.
You know, doesn't that bring you back? Because it's so true.
Right. And next week we're going to be playing our recorders.
Oh, I get the triangle.
I get the handbell. Ding.
Aww.
Ding. I hated when you got those and it was only like a note that was played once in the song and you're like, oh man. Anyway, going back to story time. So the reason I've done this in the past is because there's been some great art books and art history books and history movie making books about the different fairy tales that we've done. So when we did Snow White, there was a great book, two books actually by J.B. Kaufman about Snow White, which were released for its 75th anniversary. And then for Sleeping Beauty, there was an art book that was released in conjunction with Maleficent. Same thing with Cinderella, but we did that way before the Cinderella art book came out. There is actually a Pinocchio book. It's called Pinocchio, The Making of a Disney Epic. It's by J.B. Kaufman, who wrote the Snow White books. And unfortunately, it's been delayed and it comes out in May, which is about a month after we released this episode. And it's really sad because I've been corresponding back and forth with J.B. and, you know, wasn't able to get a copy in advance or whatever, which is totally fine. I'll get it when it comes out, but it was just, I would have loved to have read that book because so much history that he's able to go into about, you know, the making of, and you guys watched some featurettes that were able to dive into that. But So I'm going to do my best with what I have, which is the internet. But I want to go and really talk about Pinocchio as a story. Pinocchio is based on a book called The Adventures of Pinocchio. It's written by Carlo Collodi, and it was published in 1883. A lot of the other fairy tales that Disney had done were based on very popular fairy tales that weren't necessarily attributed to one author. Many of them were Grimm's fairy tales, and so there was a little bit of continuity in the story there. But this one was just came from the mind of Carlo, and he had this idea of writing a fairy tale for children. And there's so many different things that happen in the original tale of Pinocchio. And obviously, if you want to listen to this yourself, you can go to rotoscopers.com/audible and you can download an audiobook version of Pinocchio. And you definitely should, because I know that's one thing that I definitely want to check out. Just because as I was reading through the plot synopsis of The Adventures of Pinocchio, there's so much that happens in this book. It's really just very, episodic and story after story after story, while the movie really only focuses on, two to three main areas where, you know, he's going to school and then ends up joining the marionette thing. What is that called? Anyways.
Child slavery racket?
Yeah. Well, where he goes to school and then ultimately, ends up with Stromboli and then Pleasure Island. And so those are kind of like the two main, things that he gets himself in, and obviously at the very end with the whale. But so I'm just going to go really quickly, and I'm going to talk about the story of Pinocchio. So originally in Pinocchio, there's just this carpenter, and he finds this piece of wood that's a talking stick, basically, and he gives it to his neighbor Geppetto, and Geppetto uses it to build a marionette. And so he carves this talking stick, and it turns into a puppet. And since the stick can talk, now the marionette can talk. And so he names him his son. He calls him Pinocchio. But Pinocchio in the book is just this horrible character. He's really detestable. He doesn't listen. While I think in the movies, he's a bit more relatable and coy and just naive. But not this Pinocchio. So as soon as he learns how to walk, he runs away. He's caught by a marionette sort of circus. He takes him into his house. But then when Pinocchio's there, he finds a talking cricket who he kills on accident. So see ya, Jiminy. Jiminy's basically dead very early on in this version. Nice. But he does come back. So anyways, the talking cricket was sort of this conscience who warns him about the dangers of being hedonistic and being disobedient. You really should go back to your father. But Pinocchio doesn't care. So while he's at this marionette place, he puts his feet on the stove, falls asleep, and wakes up and finds that his feet have burned off. Dumb Pinocchio. This is just one of many things. So Geppetto at this time was actually put in prison because there was hearsay that he had treated Pinocchio poorly, so he was put in prison.
But he's a puppet.
Yeah, and anyway, so then Pinocchio returns back to him, and Geppetto is so kind, he makes him a new pair of feet. So then Pinocchio's like, okay, I promise, I'm going to attend school. And then Geppetto, just being so kind, he sells his only coat and gives him the money to buy books. So on his way to school, he encounters a puppet master, and he has a different name. His name in the books is Manga Fiocco, while in the film, it's obviously Stromboli. He doesn't really use him as being a puppet master, but he says, I'm just going to turn you into firewood. But then, you know, feels bad for him, lets him go, and gives him 5 pieces of gold to give Geppetto. So Pinocchio is supposed to go back and give these 5 pieces of gold to Geppetto. But then as he's traveling back, he encounters a fox and a cat. And as I'm telling this story, you will realize that there are so many animals in this book, like so many animals. This is just the beginning. These don't have names as they do in the book, but this fox and the cat, they're swindlers. The cat's pretending to be blind. The fox is pretending to be lame, and they're able to trick Pinocchio to kind of going their way. There is a blackbird that's trying to warn Pinocchio, saying, these guys are swindlers, get out of here. But of course, the cat just eats the blackbird and they move on. So Pinocchio's like, okay, cool. And so they realize that he has money. And so they're trying to convince him that if they go to this place called the Field of Miracles and he buries his coins in the ground, they will sprout. and give them about into a tree that will give you about 1 to 2,000 gold coins. Pinocchio's like, this is great. So as they're traveling there, different things happen. And I'm just going to kind of skip over some things, but the ghost of the talking cricket comes back and tries to warn Pinocchio again, like, this isn't really good. But the fox and the cat, eventually they ambush Pinocchio again. He tries escaping. But then this is where he meets a young fairy with turquoise hair. Disney calls this person the blue fairy, but in the book, she is the fairy with the turquoise hair. So this is kind of an interesting thing because while Pinocchio is talking to her, there's a bunch of bandits who catch him and they hang him on a tree. So basically, Pinocchio sort of dies in this version of the fairy tale. But in the second half, he comes back alive, so you don't have to worry about it. So the fox and the cat, they leave. But the fairy is able to rescue him. She summons a falcon who comes and saves her. And also she has a poodle that randomly arrives and they take her to her stagecoach. You know, they find out that, no, he is not dead. They meet, you know, through this, there's just all sorts of animals that she is working with. And there's an owl, a crow, a bunch of undertaker rabbits, woodpeckers. So after he comes back alive, he starts lying about what happened to him, like what happened to the gold coins. And that's when the nose starts growing. So it's so big he can't even turn around the room. And she's like, well, hey, when you lie, your nose is going to grow. But, you know, she's being nice to him. So she summons a flock of 1,000 woodpeckers to chisel the nose down to normal size. So the fairy then sends for Geppetto. And she then lives with Geppetto and Pinocchio in the forest. So as Pinocchio's heading out to meet his father again, he encounters the fox and the cat again. But this time they were disguised earlier, but they're not disguised right now. And they just keep wanting him to go to this Field of Miracles. So he goes to the Field of Miracles. He plants his gold, but he has to stay there overnight. So he falls asleep. And in the morning, the cat and the fox have unburied those and taken the gold for themselves. So this is pretty sad because he uncovers this and realizes that there's no gold. He's been totally swindled. There's even a parrot who happens to be around there who's mocking Pinocchio, like, you're so dumb. I can't believe you fell for that. I can't believe you fell for that. That's my parrot impression. So yeah, there's just a whole bunch of stories that involve animals and different morals and things that happen. Eventually, I'm going to skip over a bunch of them just because, you know, there's so many. This is so long. But he does eventually meet somebody who's his friend, which is Lampwick. And he says, hey, let's go to a place called Toyland. That's a place where you can play hooky all day and you don't have to work. But it turns out when you do that, if you become lazy, lazy boys turn into donkeys. So they go, they play hooky, and then both of them actually turn into full donkeys. Once they turn to full donkeys, they are sold to a circus. So as Pinocchio says, he's trained by the ringmaster to do tricks, but then one day he falls and sprains his leg. And so then he is then sold to someone who wants to turn the donkey into a drum. They want to skin him and drum him. But to drown him and to kill him, they throw him in the sea. And in doing so, a bunch of fish eat off his donkey outer skin, I guess. And then it's like, hey, I'm a boy underneath, which is really, really bizarre. Anyway,
that's creepy.
Yeah, so he's back to being a puppet. And so he's swimming around, and this is where in the film it's a whale, but in here it's called the terrible dogfish, and that's where Pinocchio realizes that his father is actually living inside this huge fish, and so he manages to save them. But on their way back, going back home, they pass two beggars. It's the fox and the cat again, but this time the cat really is blind and the fox really is lame. And is so thin that he basically has no hair. And they beg and beg and plead for money. And Pinocchio says, no, heck no. Like, you've done all these mean things. Like, this serves you right for, like, all the wicked things that you've done to me. So they go back home. They meet the ghost of the talking cricket again. He's always there. Anyway, at the very, very end of it, they go back home. Pinocchio is able to help his father. He goes to town. He saved all this money. But then he realizes that the fairy with the turquoise hair is ill and she's sick and she needs money. So he actually gives it to her, and then falls asleep. And then overnight he dreams. He realizes that he is a real boy. He's actually been transformed and his puppet body is actually sitting next to him in a chair, just lifeless. So basically because he was kind in the end to the fairy, He found that she had turned him into a real boy. She also leaves him a new suit, new boots, new bag, and those 40 pennies that he had given her at the very beginning. And just well, the way it ends is pretty simple. It's like, wow, he's so shocked. And Geppetto also, you know, returns to being healthy and then goes back to wood carving. The end. So that was my very long and probably somewhat boring version of Pinocchio, but there's just so many different tales that happen. Like I mentioned, there's lots of animals. There's at one point a dolphin, a pigeon, a serpent, a parrot, an owl, a falcon, a squirrel, just so many animals in this, but a lot of similarities but obviously a lot of other things. I think adding all these animal elements to the movie might have made it a bit more less realistic. And I mean, we're talking about a puppet that turns into a human, but for some reason, this movie still feels slightly grounded in reality. Maybe that's just me, but I think that would have just definitely taken in a different angle.
Wow. That was a lot of history.
A lot. Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of material for whoever's directing the live action remake by Disney.
Oh yeah.
Maybe we'll see some of that stuff. Maybe, you know, maybe Pinocchio will go back to how horrible and rotten he was in the book.
No, yeah, definitely. I think that's the fact that it has so much that hasn't really been used in the Disney adaptation, that they can make it something new. They can go and they can expand out the fox and the cat's role and this, you know, planting the gold coins and all that stuff. But we will talk about the remake later. We are here to talk about this amazing one, which I doubt the remake will be able to, you know, do better than. But hey, prove me wrong, Disney. I'd love to see it.
No, stop trying to prove us wrong. Just make it original content. Well, we say original, but like most of Disney's stuff has been inspired by like fairy tales and storybooks like this. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's real anymore. But anyway, if you are not convinced that the film Pinocchio is a true animated masterpiece, then you will after this episode, because we did our research. We took in the movie, digested it. We're going to see what comes out the other end.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, the master showman, that's me, Imbotuto Rivaldo, and by special permission of the management, is presenting to you the one and only Pinocchio.
Pinocchio, the story of the wooden puppet who wanted to become a real boy.
I'm going to school.
That's the stuff, Pinocchio.
And set off on a fantastic adventure with a very special friend.
Cricket's the name.
Jiminy Cricket.
Hi, diddly-dee. Life for me.
Pinocchio.
What happened?
It's thrilled generations of audiences with its spectacular animation, its memorable moments, and its unforgettable music.
When you wish upon a star.
It's the most breathtaking movie of the summer.
You are a real boy.
And you're invited to share the magic with your family.
I think it's swell.
It's Walt Disney's classic, Pinocchio, for anyone who's ever wished upon a star.
Production notes after watching the making of featurette. This was the, I thought was interesting. This was the first Disney film to use maquette-like models, like physical sculpted models, as a guide for animating the characters. So they actually made models of all the characters so that they could animate on model, as it were. And you can most blatantly see it when Pinocchio hops off of Stromboli's stagecoach, you know, after escaping from his cage. You can see that the stagecoach was obviously rotoscoped. Well, how did they do that? Well, they made a model and they just filmed it, you know, going down a little model road. And so that's how they got their frames. And that was Bob Jones's work. He was a master puppeteer, apparently, who originally came to Disney Studios trying to get Walt to produce Puppetmation features. Can you imagine that? Like those old, old, like, Alice in Wonderland animations that Walt did, like, as a student, or, like, not even, not a student, but, like, way, way before he even founded Disney. And so Bob Jones is the one who originated this technique, and, of course, it happens all the time now in animation. A lot in VFX, you know, Weta, who did Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, they do that a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you go to the Animation Pavilion in Epcot, I think it was, they probably moved it or switched it around by now, but I got to see the maquettes for Dean Hardscrabble of Monsters University.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that helps it helps in 3D animation. It helps the modelers, you know, stay on model, and the way they pose the maquette can give a clue as to what kind of, you know, what kind of rig or what kind of, you know, movements they can achieve with the model. So we still use it today, but yeah, it originally happened at Disney Studios with this film. And so this was like the first time I really, really sat down and paid attention to the film. I remember seeing this when I was like 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course I didn't retain much, but I know bits and pieces.
I always grew up watching this film, so there's no recollection of me seeing in theaters at that 1992 re-release. However, this was always one that we had on VHS and that I'd watch from time to time because, you know, I watched every Disney movie, of course. What animation addict doesn't?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm embarrassed to say it took me a very, very long time to, like, consciously, you know, as an animation addict, watch this film. And so I'm glad we did this episode. And so I flipped it on and I love the first thing you see is RKO Radio Pictures presents. I was like, hey, awesome. Old school.
Totally. RKO, they were the distributor for the first two releases of this film. So this initial film in 1940, it was re-released later again, but then anything after that was released under the Buena Vista Pictures moniker.
Oh, so, well, you look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we open up to the old storybook.
My favorite. This is definitely something that is a Disney classic. They started with Snow White. They continued it with this. There are many others that did so as well. And, you know, I love this, but at the same time, I love this movie. I'll just say that. The animation is beautiful, but you definitely see where they weren't as advanced as nowadays, particularly, you know, when the book is just part of the background painting or layout, mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It has a lot of depth, texture, but then you have to open the book. And so you have the background painting of the book actually opened, and then you have a cell on top that is supposed to be the cover and some of those initial pages. And once you flip that switch, it just doesn't look as good because, you know, you can't add a lot of texture and animation because you have to add texture on every single cell. So it's usually very flat. And it just, I noticed that as someone who kind of dissects animation. So when they were flipping the page or even when it did make that switch, I was like, wow, that cover suddenly looks much different. It's so much more simple. But you do what you can back then. That wouldn't be something we would even talk about nowadays with animation. But back then that was something that they really had to consider, how to make this book move, while still looking like part of the film in the background.
Absolutely. Have you ever watched an animated movie and the scene is supposed to have something that's not supposed to move and it moves, but you can totally tell it's going to happen because it's painted as a cell instead of part of the layout?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Or it happens a lot in like old Hanna-Barbera cartoons like Scooby-Doo, you know, from the 60s and 70s.
That's the first thing that came to my mind when you said that.
I was absolutely.
Hanna-Barbera.
It's like back in the day, was anyone fooled back then, you know? I don't know. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Probably the casual viewer.
Yeah.
At that point, they should have just, I guess Jiminy Cricket is animated, so he opens the book, you know, with his little umbrella cane thing. So I guess they couldn't use live video. But anyway.
So another thing that Jiminy mentions here, which I guess I never consciously put together until just actually watching this film this time, but the film is set in Italy. I know we talk about all these European fairy tales and Belle is from France and, you know, Anna and Elsa, they're from Norway-esque. But there's never really anything from Italy, but this Pinocchio is totally Italian story. which I thought was really, really cool. And I know people are going to be like, Morgan, how do you not know that? But I don't know. Stromboli, you think I would know, but it was just a name to me.
Not important to the story, I don't think.
No.
Well, I think the main reason why you don't realize that is because two of the art directors, you know, you had Albert Herder, who was Swiss, and Gustav Tengrim, who was Swedish. And they were the ones that went in and did all the background paintings. And if you look at it, it's like you're not in Italy. You are definitely looking at Switzerland / Sweden / Northern / Europe.
General Europe.
Yeah. up there. Like, I mean, the fact that you've got, all of these wooden carvings, in everything, all of these faces in everything. That's not something you would normally see in Italy or in Italian type art. This is something that you're definitely going to see in, once you go a little bit to the north around Germany, Austria, Sweden, that whole area.
You look around the intro and there are other books, lying around. There's a Peter Pan and Alice in Wonderland, so it's kind of a foreshadowing, as it were, of future Disney classics.
Definitely.
And then we open with, it's kind of funny, you get open with Jiminy Cricket, and he's kind of like the narrator who was also a big part of the story. It wasn't always this way. Let me take you back to the first time I met Pinocchio, met that little jerk who didn't listen to what I said. Yeah, he should have opened with that. But anyway, and then he's, of course, singing the titled song, quintessential Wish Upon a Star, hits those high notes.
Mm-hmm.
Where you are.
I just love Jiminy, and he comes up and he's just like, pretty, huh? And first off, when I was younger, I just saw Jiminy and I thought, yeah, okay, I didn't really notice that these things were pretty. But then you look at it today and I can really, really appreciate the fact that the book is gorgeous. The whole design of everything is gorgeous, like immaculate. Mm-hmm. Mm. And then he's just like, pretty, huh? And I'm like, yes, Jiminy. Yes, it is. It's just an amazing achievement.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely contained in those two words. Can we just all agree that Jiminy Cricket is the perfect Disney lovable sidekick?
Yes.
I'll agree with that.
Can we just etch that out in stone? Do you want to know why? I'll tell you why. All his humor is good-natured, and it's not crude or toilet-oriented or, overly energetic, or hyper or whatever. It's impossible not to like him. I've never met someone who told me, ugh, Jiminy Cricket's so freaking annoying. Like, no, the only person who would probably say that is, like, Hitler. And Stalin and Mao. I don't know.
Makes sense.
But Jiminy is great. It's impossible to not like him. He was just designed to be this perfect companion to Pinocchio and a means to kind of humanize the movie and, like, bring us down to, to, like, just a more simple level. Because, like, I don't know. He's got, like, a great humor about him. He always has something kind of witty to say, but it's not sarcastic, He's not flawless, but at the same time, like, it's impossible to not like him. I did notice he really goes after female wooden puppets in this film. He's gaga over them.
Yeah.
He's like, it'll lead you to temptation, Pinocchio. And then he, like, goes right after the cute wooden puppet who's going around that cuckoo clock. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah,
there are a lot of moments in this film that I'm like, yeah, that probably wouldn't be included. By the way, one example of this is the cuckoo clock with the mom spanking the kid. Like,
awesome.
Wow.
Well, he's got his hand in the jam. Who wouldn't?
I know, but I'm thinking, one, that definitely wouldn't be cool nowadays. Two, I really want that clock.
It was actually a real clock. They made that.
Did you know that all the cuckoo clocks are model, like, real models that they animated and looked at?
Which
they're also,
like,
designed to be perfectly functioning in the universe of Pinocchio. I don't know how.
No, in real life. Like, they were all functioning cuckoo clocks that they made so that they could see how things move and make it as realistic as possible. Yeah. I'm like, I want one. Give me. Ooh, give me.
Now, Jiminy Cricket was principally animated by Ward Kimball, That's a name you should know if you claim to be a Disney scholar. So in Snow White, he actually worked like 8 months on this sequence for Snow White where they're like eating soup. And I haven't seen all of it. I saw clips of it. And it was
the soup sequence, this one that got him so mad.
The old soup sequence. Yeah, he worked 8 months. Imagine working the better part of an entire year on one animated sequence by yourself and all the energy and all like, you know, the artistic, you know, rapture that comes with achieving something like that. And then it was eventually cut. Walt called him into his office and said that it's not working. It drags the pace of the story. We're cutting it. And of course he was disappointed, crestfallen, you know, devastated. But after that, Walt asked him, to sign on to Pinocchio and that they were going to animate a character called Jiminy Cricket. He asked Ward Kimball to animate him. And so that's kind of a thing that happens a lot. It took me a while to realize all of the work, one, that goes into animated films, but how much is cut until I started working on, like, my own little short films at school or whatever, working on Wake, this short film that I'm working on, animated, you know, here at A&M, and just how much material is cut just to make the story flow and just to perfect it. And we're talking about weeks and weeks and months of work by the animators, and it's just obliterated. Mm-hmm. And it's this really interesting thing. But if this ever happens to you, if you're like a budding animator or an animation student, don't take it personally when your director cuts material that you animated, because heck, you could be animating the Jiminy Cricket of your production right afterwards.
It's true.
But it's just something that happens in the industry. It's a hard truth.
He was actually going to quit right after that and leave. But,
all over a bowl of soup.
Thankfully, he was safe. Saved, and now we have his great portfolio of work that we can admire on the podcast.
Well, what's funny, I mean, think about it though. 8 months, that's like an entire school year. If you're like putting in terms of
that's six times.
It's like, oh my gosh, this is insane. I would be very crestfallen if I were that same way. But yeah, it's, I love how when you look at Jiminy Cricket, there is absolutely no semblance of a cricket to him.
No, he looks more like his voice actor.
Yeah, he does. He does.
He's got the eyebrows and everything.
Mm-hmm. Talking about voice actors, so this was actually one of the films that really implemented the use of the celebrity voice. And I know that we talk about like, oh, you know, celebrity voices, it's all about that nowadays. But really, this film for Disney, since Snow White was such a success, Walt Disney said, I want to capitalize that even more
the best of the best.
With these celebrities. And so he got some of the biggest guys at the time to play the voices like Jiminy Cricket and whatnot, which is definitely not something that was really seen for Snow White. So
yeah.
Anyone getting mad, including me, that, oh, it's all celebrity voices nowadays. I mean, whatever. Back in the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, they were celebrities. I just don't know who they are. I only know them from that film. So.
Oh, right. Well, hey, Disney did it first, and I always look to Prince of Egypt as an example of you could have celebrity voices and still have an amazing film.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hey, speaking of the celebrity voice actors that they got for this film, did you know that Mel Blanc, aka voice of Bugs Bunny, the man of 100 voices or 1,000? I don't know. I'm the man of 100 voices.
Yeah.
1,000 voices. But anyway, he actually did voices for this film, but his lines were eventually cut.
Yeah.
He was Gideon, the kitty cat, the dopey one that hangs around with Honest John. It was another great character.
The only thing that they kept was a...
Oh, yeah, the little... when he's dunking the smoke ring into his beer. Yeah. There's nothing more nasty than that.
That's disgusting.
Oh, man. That's a great gag right there.
Yeah. I mean, it has been so long since I'd seen this movie. And I'm really trying to figure out why this doesn't have such a high replay value for me. I mean, it's not for its lack of aesthetics, as we talked about. This film is amazing. But yeah, why don't you guys think it had such a good replay value?
Well, we never bought the VHS, so we never had it as part of our collection. So I glossed over it for other films. And I mean, going over to a friend's house or at school, like, it was probably a low chance that we would watch Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this, if I had like a 3-year-old, I would play a different Disney film besides Pinocchio. it may not be as popular with young children nowadays because it has such dark themes. I mean, think of it. Pinocchio, like, faces constant menace throughout constant. This whole film. Constant. And, you know, there's a few uses of the word jackass. And there's smoking, drinking, and there's a horrible donkey transformation sequence that's been described as something on the level of Alfred Hitchcock in terms of horror.
Yeah, it's true.
And so there's a few elements that are just dark. And it's not that Snow White wasn't dark. It's just that Pinocchio just has this constant impending doom and destruction looming over Pinocchio, who is literally a puppet. He is controlled by everyone around him and has almost no agency of his own.
Yeah. You know, I grew up watching this film, like I mentioned earlier, especially when I was little, and this film did not convince me to start smoking. Oh, I did not think that drinking alcohol was a great thing, or going to a place called Pleasure Island where you can sit around and do nothing was a good
idea. No, you don't do anything. You do all the things that bad boys do.
I wouldn't have been allowed. It was only boys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel that, I feel like we give our kids not enough credit. Obviously, a film like Watership Down might be a little mature for the youngins, but this one, while it does have some scary elements, as the MPAA would probably rate it, I don't think it's so terrifying that it's unwatchable or, you know, terrifying for a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is all just right. Something that I'm coming up with right now as, like, it's really interesting, the fact that, you know, When You Wish Upon a Star is the anthem of this movie and of Disney in general. And yet it is so dark. It's just, it's kind of funny, the two sides of this coin that it plays.
Mm. We live in a dark, dark world.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people would call this era, like, they were trying to go a little bit darker with the art. And they called it kind of like the Rembrandt effect.
Ooh, interesting.
Maybe that's why, I don't know, it's just dark in general, but.
Well, I think they cited Rembrandt in No Strings Attached, which is also an NSYNC album, but it is also the title of the making of featurette. But I think what they meant by Rembrandt is to have kind of this Baroque, almost Gothic, tone as far as like color palette and light.
Right.
But you're also right about it being, you know, darker tone. Absolutely. And it's in the dead of night, actually, when Jiminy Cricket hops over to Geppetto's workshop. I love the hopping motion. It's a point of view shot. The very first first person sequence. It's almost like a found footage movie in a Disney film in the 40s, but much, much better executed than, of course, Watership Down's zooming shots, as we discussed in the last episode. It's funny how it was like almost more than 20 years later, but it just did not match the mastery over the multi-pane camera system that Disney did in this film.
Oh, they mastered it.
Would you agree? It's just awesome.
Oh, it's so beautiful that when I think of excellent multiplane, I think of the scene in Pinocchio where it's school time, he's going to school, and they're just panning through the town.
Right, when it's morning, and it starts with like the pigeons or the doves and in the bell tower, and then it just keeps going on and on and on.
Yes, it's so good, and it's just so well done. That is one of the best scenes of this whole film.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So interesting. I went to the Walt Disney Family History Museum, which is in San Francisco. I went there last year. I was on a school trip and I made an effort to go out there by myself to visit this museum. And I have tons of pictures. You can follow me at Morgan Stradling on Instagram. Oh. Also, it's on the Rotoscopers Instagram as well. If you just scroll back about a year, you'll see some really amazing photo. Every photo was up there. But they have this multi-plane camera. I'll include a link of it in the show notes. And it's two stories, basically. When I was looking at it, I was on the second story, and you can kind of look over this railing and see has how far it goes down, but it's so incredible, the technology that they used to create this. And this was actually one of only three multiplane cameras in the world. There's one still at the Disney Studios. There's one at the Walt Disney Family Museum. And then one is in France. Where in France, I do not know. Someone asked me that. I just know that the tour guide who I kind of made friends with was, well, he wasn't a tour guide. He's just a worker. And I was asking him lots of questions. But yeah, it's in France. So if you're over there, let me know where it is.
Awesome. If you know the location of the third multi-pay camera in the world, tell Morgan Stradley. Yep. And so we're introduced to Geppetto, you know, and he has two, he really only has like two close friends with him. One of them, and they're, none of them are human. One of them is Figaro, the kitty cat. And then the other one is Cleo. Oh, Cleo, little goldfish. Cleo's pretty cool. But Figaro rules, man.
I mean,
if they ever make an animated sequel for Disney's Pinocchio, it should be called Figaro's Quest.
Mason, no. We already have enough horrible sequels. That sounds too close to Patch's Adventure.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Not okay.
Also, what is it? Scamp's Adventure from Lady and the Tramp?
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. What did I say?
Patch.
Patches. Oh, well, Patches is
Patch
from 101.
Patch does have one, doesn't he?
Yeah, he has like
Patch goes on an adventure, and then Scamp goes on an adventure, and it's basically the most popular child.
He should have done a mashup.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know about y'all, but I got major nostalgia / deja vu when he goes, "Music Professor!" And
yes.
They start that little song. That's from one of my Disney sing-along video cassettes.
Yes, I had that one. I'm totally with you with the nostalgia because I know exactly where that sequence ended. It obviously ends where Figaro is looking at the,
I love that joke.
There's like a little edge where something falls into the crack and
yeah, he's got like a trench around his living room.
Head, boom. And that's where it ended.
Absolutely. I love how Geppetto's just messing with Figaro. He's like petting him. Oh, so cute. Whoops. And he makes Pinocchio kick him in the butt. It's like, oh, already acting up.
He's a jerk.
Figaro's like, what the heck? I wasn't doing anything.
Provoked.
All right. And one thing that struck me in these sequences, you know, in the candlelight of his workshop were the hand animated shadows. Like, just think of the perspective and mastery of perspective that it took to do that. You know, this is before CG lighting, of course.
That's one thing that I noticed, definitely. I noticed it in the marionette scene where I got those strings. Like, there's so many shadows in that. And it's just the attention to detail that they put into this film and the extra effort that they did was wonderful. And it just added so much depth to the animation, which I thought was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of Geppetto a little bit, I think he is so adorable. Like Pinocchio, he's almost naive. He's just
cute
and old. So what do you guys think about him?
Hey, any man who enjoys a good smoke before going to bed is all right.
Has good priorities.
Oh, yeah. Tobacco use, everyone. Woo, woo, watch out. If you thought that was bad, just wait till they go to Pleasure Island.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you gotta take a long drift.
That kid. What's his name? Langsby or something?
Lampwick,
that's right. What a maroon.
But, you know, like, I want to know a little bit more about Geppetto's backstory. Is he a widower? Was he married at one point? Has he always wanted a kid? And where did this come from? Because, yeah, after he goes to bed and takes a smoke, he says his prayer and he says, "Oh, Figaro! Look, a wishing star." And then he goes and wishes on the star, which, I wasn't sure if this was associated to Disney or not. And I did research just to double check, but yeah, Starlight, Star Bright. It's an old English nursery rhyme. It's not necessarily native or originated from this film, although this is one of the very first film appearances of this nursery rhyme on film or TV, which is pretty cool. So, you know, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the Starlight, Star Bright, first star I wish tonight, I wish I may, I wish I might, have the wish I wish tonight, which I must admit, I've never actually said those words to a star, but I need to.
Oh, I totally did.
You've never wished upon a star?
See, The funny thing is, when I was younger, I would do that, and then I was hanging out with my uncle one time, and I was like, yeah, but you gotta be really careful not to wish on a plane, because that one just doesn't work out for you.
Ooh.
And so we changed the words just for fun. We're like, when you wish upon a plane, all your dreams will fly away.
Oh,
for
no.
When you wish upon a plane, your dreams don't come true.
Oh.
It was kind of one of those anti-songs. It was really funny.
It's pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. If you really want to get into it, I think this whole story is just an allegory for the struggling small business owner. Geppetto wants to feel needed. He doesn't want people to just come into his shop and decide if they feel like spending their discretionary income on his wooden puppets and alarm clocks and trinkets. He wants to feel important in society. So he wishes up a boy of his own to raise. And boy, does that backfire on him. So yeah, maybe that's a little looking too into it. But yeah, Geppetto's pretty cool. Not my absolute favorite character, but I mean, he's pretty solid. I don't not like him.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, how in the world is he able to sleep with all of that noise around?
Well, people who snore just get used to snoring.
Boy, does he snore.
Yeah.
He's like at Monstro level of snoring. I really like that one. That one's part of the, if you play Disney Scene It, the DVD game, that's one of the scenes that we would always get when we had to do like a Your Play or a Art All Play or something like that. I love that line. It's one of my favorite all-time Disney quotes. After all, enough's enough. You know, I can't imagine what it must have been like animating all those clocks at once and like syncing them up to sound.
Yeah,
that's beyond my levels.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why I'm not an animator.
Well, what's interesting is you look at this, the songs and the score. Okay, in the song, like, Give a Little Whistle, I will say that, like, come on now. When you saw the saw kind of make its little, like, noise, that is not the sound of a real saw, just saying. I should know.
This is from the studio that brought you Steamboat Willie, where nothing makes the sound it's supposed to.
It's true. But, you know, if you look at this one, it actually is really amazing, all of the sound effects that were put in here. You were talking about the Monstro and his noise and the sound that makes. And
I think they lowered a microphone into the seventh circle of hell to do that.
Yeah. And they found all these really cool instruments that, you know, it's like, the sound of magic is what they would call it. It's like these little harpsichord.
Oh yeah.
Things.
They had this old electric piano was like the first one ever made and it had this kind of eerie noise.
Yeah.
I remember watching that.
That's cool. Another really cool thing is this was actually the very first Disney feature to win both the best score and best song. First one. And that honor actually wouldn't go to them again until Mary Poppins. And then not even again until the 90s when, you know, Alan Menken came around.
Holy cow.
So this was a big deal. Hats off to the composer who did a really amazing job with this.
Yes. So speaking of the score, I have the Walt Disney Legacy Collection. The Walt Disney Legacy Collection, they released the soundtrack, but they also have a bunch of additional stuff. So Chelsea was talking about the composer, Paul Smith. He was one of the composers on the film who did the score, and very beautiful. He has a very iconic sound to early Disney films. But in this version, basically it has the whole entire score. It takes one whole disc, and then the second disc is Cliff Edwards, who is the voice of Jiminy. He was a very well-known singer at the time, but it's just really interesting because usually they have bonus footage. Like for Mary Poppins, there's a whole entire disc just of interviews that the Sherman Brothers and Walt Disney and everyone had with P.L. Travers. Really, really interesting stuff. But this one, there really isn't much for Pinocchio that they could use as bonus. So they used Cliff Edwards did some other songs for Disney, which were mostly like sort of the Mickey Mouse Club sort of stuff. Like one's called Stop, Look, and Listen. Eyes will tell your feet, just, you know, how to tell you to look left and right before you cross the road. So yeah, that was actually, this is probably one of the most disappointing Legacy Collection CDs, just because those bonus things on disc 2, first off, there's only 2 discs. The other ones have like 3 or 4, are just so irrelevant to the actual film, other than the fact that it's the same singer. But anyways, yes, the score itself is very beautiful. I had it in my car for a long time and loved it. So it also has the other songs that are on there. So Hi Diddly D, When You Wish Upon a Star, every song is also on there as well. So definitely check it out if you're interested. Disc one is slightly better than disc, much better than disc two.
There's actually three people that you could cite as being like the creators of the score. The other two is, one is Lee Harley and then Ned Washington. Ned Washington did all the lyrics for, you know, When You Wish Upon a Star. And Lee Harley, he was actually the composer on some of the early Silly Symphonies. And so, like, if you ever remember that one is like the band concert where, you know, you've got
it's Mickey trying to compose in the park, but it's like everything's going wrong.
No, that's the
tornado.
That's the band concert. And then there's the Music Land one. The Music Land one I thought was my favorite because it had like the cello trying to marry the bass or something like that. And so you just have all of these sounds.
Instead of lines, they're just them like plucking the strings of that instrument.
Yeah.
As their voice. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And Morgan was talking about it one time and said it was like this score was very literal. And I'm really certain that it had a lot to do with that.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So Geppetto wants Pinocchio to be a real boy. He's like really into his own craftsmanship. Kind of egotistic, don't you think? I'm just kidding. He could almost be real. He wouldn't be cool if he was real. Like, we just didn't know it, you know? And then, of course, he gets his wish because he wished upon a star. Duh. And so in comes the overly rotoscoped Blue Fairy, who's like this idealized woman from the 40s. Blue Fairy. And Jiminy Cricket's like, Even he knows. But she's very much out of place, and I can guess as to their motives, as to why she was rotoscoped, you know? Maybe they're trying to match the perfection and ideal persona that Snow White had, you know?
Yeah, it's weird because everyone else is cartoony and has a very specific style. I look at Geppetto, Pinocchio, the cat, and Honest John and Stromboli. Like, everyone is characterized in a bit, not super realistic. And then you have her, a fairy of all things, super realistic. We're not deviating from the footage. She is what she is. She's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I think she's an example of getting
that deep
it right.
Voice.
But, oh, yeah. Sexy.
I love that voice.
Can you say that on the podcast?
Yeah, we can. if we can say Jackass and piss off, we can say sexy. Anyway, I love the part where he's like, the name's Cricket, Jiminy Cricket. And the Blue Fairy tells him to kneel. I thought she was introducing herself as Neil.
Is that Cricket. Low voice?
Neil. And he's like, okay. It's kind of awkward. You're a dude. Anyway.
Man, that would be really progressive of Disney.
That would have been. So yeah, she's like the perfect woman, you know, comes in, bestows the gift of life, sort of. But there's a catch. Isn't that always the way with fairies? Like, I'll give you what you want, but there's a catch. At the stroke of midnight, you know, if you prick your finger, you know.
they don't have full powers like maybe witches and stuff, but.
Like Maleficent, she knows everything. When I watched the, No Strings Attached, the featurette.
The
NSYNC
music video?
Not the NSYNC album. No.
Sorry. Was that your joke?
No. I already said the joke earlier.
Sorry.
Now it is an inside joke and we can keep it.
Whoa. And it's a joke we'll keep repeating.
Yeah. I watched in the documentary that like in early production, he was kind of like Woody, you know, early versions of Woody from Toy Story, how Woody was kind of like a nasty, not likable character. And of course they revamped a lot of the story and characters to kind of make it more lovable. Thank goodness that they did. Pinocchio was kind of the same way. He was more like, he was just not likable. And, thanks to Morgan's history lesson, we now know why, because the source material called him to be such a jerk. But anyway. And so, he's kind of clanking around because he just became painfully aware of his own self-consciousness. And, Geppetto's like, what the heck? There's like a person in my workshop. Brings out this old pistol. And the way he holds it, do you think that Mr. Smee could have been a distant relative of, of Geppetto? Try your luck, Mr. Smee. And then Smee's just like, anyway. And so he's like, real boy, let's dance, you know. Geppetto's way of celebrating is to have like a jubilee dance party in his own shop.
Who wouldn't?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty good point.
Why not?
Have you noticed that everything in Geppetto's workshop has this like hand-carved, hand-crafted quality to it? Like everything has personality to it.
It's his craft.
Yeah, even his candlesticks, you know? I guess that's what he does in his hobby. Just like,
that's like walking into an artist's house and they have like nothing on their walls, or the art that they have on the walls is like stuff you would buy at Target. Like, really? Expected more.
That's
I don't know. I don't know
you
if that's
need to be
a,
more
a
like
great,
Geppetto.
Not a great analogy, to be honest.
I don't know. I'm like way too narcissistic with my art to not put it everywhere. Like my office has a lot of like my digital paintings and sculptures and stuff.
See, that's cool. Yeah. Cause you're rad.
Half my desktop backgrounds are from like animation tests and assignments from school.
Nice.
Anyway. And then we go into this, we transition to the next morning, and this is that brilliant, brilliant, camera work with the multi-pane technique, where you just zoom in and out of these, you know, architectural, you know, forms, and then you see people walking around town, and it's in this brilliant perspective, you know, it's not cheating anything or taking shortcuts, and this is something that can't be achieved when you hold the camera down vertically on top of the background pane. They had to literally turn the camera horizontal and like guide it through the layout panes. So it was kind of like a rotated, a different axis that it was running on. And that's pretty interesting. And I guess that's how they did the illusion of like peering around the corner and going around the form of the building, you know, to look at other people and then, you know, finally to rest outside the workshop. And it's just mind-blowing. I really envy the days back before everything was just, I don't want to say easy, but possible to do with CG.
Yeah.
Last week for my sci-fi class here at A&M, we watched Total Recall, which was made in 1990. And most of the film is done with makeup effects, miniatures, elaborate, you know, hand-built sets. There's only a few shots that incorporate CG. And it's got so much personality, and it made me think, golly, like, what would it be like? I would love to, like, just go back in time when no one has ever heard of an Intel processor or an Apple computer, you know, or Pixar or, you know, Industrial Light and Magic as we know it now, and just try to work these effects out practically with physical objects. I can't believe it. I'm day to day. The more I watch more of these old Disney classics, I'm just humbled and blown away by these old animation and technical legends of filmmaking back then. Anyway, let's have a moment of silence for them. So yeah. And then he has to go to school.
Like, you have to go to school? Why? I'm going to be an actor.
You don't need school if you're an actor. Hey, why don't you want a shortcut, kid? Goodbye. He's like, goodbye, son. Hurry back. And so it starts. If he only knew. Would you believe in about 24 hours you're going to be in the belly of a whale?
Well, I love
and it's
that
all
it's
going
like,
to be his fault. Actually,
you've
your
been
fault
around
for wishing on that stupid star.
It's like Pinocchio's been with Geppetto basically 24 hours. You think
he's even
a little
body
more
trained?
Yeah, he needs a little bit more adjustment before you send him out on the world alone. I mean, I don't know. Bad parenting example number one by Geppetto. Okay, there will be many more, but yeah, no.
Absolutely. I mean, in Mary Shelley's book Frankenstein, as soon as Dr. Frankenstein creates his monster, the monster like freaks out because of the sudden shock of being alive. Like he should be an infant and being helpless, but now he's like a full grown man who can move and talk. And you really don't see that with Pinocchio. Maybe we'll see that in the gritty reboot, you know, sure to be heavy on CGI and sure to star Helena Bonham Carter and any of the other stars of Harry Potter. but yeah, Pinocchio just irritates me with his decisions, but I guess that's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, you know, and when we were going into this film, I thought it was really interesting taking a look at like kind of a snapshot of of Snow White. And Snow White, it's very debatable, but I would say it's more of a girl type movie. Just because it's, you know, based around the heroine. And then Pinocchio is more of the boy type movie because really it's just talking about boys and how they need to grow up and be good boys. You know, the blue fairy comes and says, a boy that won't be good might as well be made of wood. And it's really interesting the type of marketing that they had toward this for this movie. Obviously, during this time, they were a lot more able, and it was a lot more acceptable to have a movie. The whole point of the movie is to teach a value or to teach a lesson. You look at nowadays techniques of writing and everything, it's kind of looked down upon because it kind of seems like you're preaching a little bit. But in this time period, it was totally acceptable. And I just think it's really, I always say interesting, but it is interesting to look at the how they treated both sides of the, you know, the male and the female points of view for these movies.
Yeah. So right at this point, we're introduced to good old Honest John and Gideon.
It's really important to just never trust anybody who calls himself Honest John.
Yeah, never trust a Disney character whose Disney gloves are off-white. Not pure white like Mickey, you know.
With holes in them, right?
Oh, they got holes in the fingers? My gosh. Yeah, dead giveaway that he's evil.
Okay, so if you think he's evil based on white gloves, we've talked about other things that make a character bad in animation. So we got, he's wearing white gloves. He has a horrible crooked nose.
Oh, totally.
What else is there?
His face is triangular, mostly because he's a fox, but also because he's a Disney villain.
It's true.
Most Disney villains are, unless they're surprise story twist villains, you know, like Lotso. Spoiler alert. They will typically be a triangle, you know, triangle shape as far as their character design.
Triangle shapes, okay.
All
right. The triangle of evil.
They have to have a twisted sword.
Oh, a twisted sword, which Honest John doesn't have, but if he had a sword, it would probably be twisted. Yeah, yellow eyes, that's another one. That's more of a Clayton kind of trait. Clayton and Scar. Well, I think Scar had green eyes, actually. But anyway, so yeah, it's the off-white Disney gloves that I noticed. And, of course, they refer good old Pinocchio to Stromboli, a.k.a. the King of Squash and Stretch.
Stromboli is amazing.
I love
his character, and I love that part.
He's a pimp.
At the very end where he just does that dance with his bum.
Oh,
like, what is
Constantinople! And Pinocchio's like, no! I thought he'd be like, no, not Constantinople! Anyway. Yeah, he's very fluid. Very boisterous and loud. I say he's the King of Squash and Stretch because we used his character as an example when we went over the 12 principles of animation at BYU when I was taking hand-drawn animation. And we went over some scans from the Disney archives of Stromboli shaking his belly, you know.
So what's an example of Stromboli squashing and Stromboli stretching?
Well, it's not necessarily, he doesn't stretch like very, he's not very elastic in his stretching, but if it's just a law of physics in the cartoon world. If you squash, you have to stretch back to your original position. And so, you know, where he laughs and shakes his gut and it's just kind of boing, you know, and then of course there's a lot of fat rolling when he does his little Constantinople dance, you know.
Here's an interesting thing. He's actually the same voice as the coachman.
Oh, the English guy who takes them to Pleasure Island.
Yeah.
I had totally forgotten about him. But yeah, why does Stromboli get, the coachman guy get upstaged by Stromboli?
Oh, Stromboli's just, he's Italian. Okay. The Italians are always much more, just giant and big in their movements. And then the English guy, he's just hiding in the background very menacingly. And
you know who the coachman
big bag
is?
Of money.
He's like the guy who owns the insane asylum in Beauty and the Beast.
He is.
He's
yes.
extremely sinister, but he's not the main villain and he's often overlooked, but just as creepy and horrible as the main villain.
Well, he's actually more creepy and horrible.
I mean, love it.
Stromboli, at least, like his was just, you know, let's go around the country and make some money.
He just wants to be rich.
Yeah.
Coachman's got this like countrywide donkey importing racket that involves
right.
like horrible transformations. Yeah. We'll get into that in a little bit. Stromboli, he just wants to make money. He's a master puppeteer. Actually, he's a master at guiding the orchestra, and the puppeteers, we don't even know who they are. Stromboli doesn't even touch any puppets. And so this is the part where Pinocchio does the iconic Got No Strings song. How does he get his voice that high?
because he hasn't yet hit puberty, so he's able to hit these amazing notes that no one else can. Have you ever heard the Lord of the Rings soundtrack? It's true.
Yeah, that's the song that if you ever watch like a parody video of something horrible happening and they really want to up the dramaticness, they always play that song that plays when they scramble out of Khazad Dûm and Gandalf is dead and Frodo's like crying and it's like super emotional. But anyway. So yeah, Pinocchio is an amazing singer and he's okay. They actually like him. You know, because he's this amazing wooden puppet who can move without the use of support cables or whatever he says. And I love the Mad Russian guys. There's this part where they're just spinning like Tasmanian Devil. They just appear as like a little dervish. And and then they pause just in time to go, hey, you know, because that's what Russian dancers do. And then, of course, Stromboli reveals his extremely sinister plot to just keep Pinocchio as his, like, entertainment slave to make him money. He doesn't even give Pinocchio a share except for this fake tin can thing that he got. I love how every time Stromboli gets mad, he like makes this like high pitched whinnying noise, like, and then he like starts cursing people out in Italian. I want to see if anyone can like translate those lines.
I'm not even sure that they are real lines.
Yeah, who knows? It might be just Italian gibberish. So yeah, Stromboli's a jerk. He just wants to exploit Pinocchio, and he's like, and when you're old and can't do it and not as active anymore, I'll cut you up for firewood. Waste not. But yeah, he's evil. And this is one of the most frustrating parts, because Geppetto is out looking for Pinocchio, right?
Oh, it's sad.
Well, for one, it's these brilliant, brilliant shots of the stagecoach and the thunderstorm. Like, it's like opaque fog, and you can, when the thunder strikes, you know, AC/DC style, you can see the lightning reflect off of the stagecoach, and they achieve some really, really cool things. But I hate films where someone is searching for another person, and they like barely miss each other, or they're like right next to each other. They don't realize it. They're like in the same place, and it's so dumb. And I just described the entire plot line of August Rush, but I hate films like that.
Well, you know, in the writer's room, they're like, oh, you know, it would be awesome when they're in the same place and they barely miss each other. Oh, it's going to create so much tension. Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Let's do it. But no, it's like, oh, it's been done a million times before. And it's so annoying.
It really is. It has to happen to get audience drawn in with Geppetto's quest to find his horrible son who doesn't listen to anybody except the wrong people. I love the part where Jiminy calls him over to that flower that he's hiding. And he's like, you turn around. You tell him. Now you're not going to go with him, you know? And then all of a sudden he's like, bye, Jiminy Cricket. I'm going to go be an actor and smoke and drink and crap, you know? Jiminy's like, why do I even bother? I don't even want that stupid badge anymore. Anyway, you know, I was wondering at what point watching this this time around when they would introduce the old nose mechanic. It's really not integral to the plot at all, you know?
No.
Not like on Shrek 2 where they're trying to like push a button or something, and Pinocchio can't quite reach it. He's like, oh, just tell a lie. Well, like what? You know, like you're wearing women's underwear or something. Oh, I'm not wearing women's underwear. His nose doesn't grow.
But I think because it was so integral to the book and, you know, just one of these key elements that has become a part of society, or like a phrase in society. It's like, oh, you're lying so much your nose is growing, that you can't really have a Pinocchio film without his nose, you know, even though it doesn't really do much, but it's a great moment. I love when he grows so big that there's a bird nest.
The birds just spontaneously grow
And
hatch out of eggs. It's like, oh, that's a pretty powerful thing.
Well, it's very visual. Like that's one of those things. It's clear as the nose on your face is that it's a lie. Like, okay.
Yeah.
This is something that you can definitely tell. But even then, like as a kid, like that was something that you just remember. Your nose is growing. Cause I mean, obviously what is there worse than for, you know, to go to school and know that everybody can see that you're lying like that?
Interesting. Oh, what does the blue fairy say? You tell so many lies that they just blow up in your face, or I don't know. What was she saying?
I don't remember.
Well, if you go to DisneyQuotes.com, I'm sure you can find
that. Oh, really? You know, I've heard that's a great site.
I know, it is.
I hear the admin is so amazing.
Yeah, basically.
For Disney Quotes.
Yeah.
Top of the line. Yeah. So now we're, you know, during this rainy night, you know, Pinocchio escapes, I guess. And then we go back to old Honest John and Gideon. They're sitting at the bar.
They're always
dunking,
around.
Dunking their cigar smoke rings like donuts into their beer.
Gross.
Not cute.
Definitely not cute. Anyway, ladies, you can do better than that. If you're dating an Honest John, take a good look at your life. But anyway, they listen to the coachman's proposition, luring young boys to a place called Pleasure Island. It's not what you think. But it's all part of this grand scheme to make himself money, and gosh, it's just so terrible. And they catch up with Pinocchio by some unlucky chance. They tell him it's allergies. I love his doctor's, like, diagnosis. Close your eyes. What do you see? Nothing. All right, open them. What do you see? Spots. It's worse than I thought. And then they convince him he has allergies and that what he must do is go on a vacation. Now, I happen to know from experience that just because you're on, being on vacation with allergies is not pleasant. And just because you are on a vacation does not mean your allergies will magically go away, you know?
That is a very sad thing to know.
When I'm right, I'm right. Okay, Pleasure Island is brilliant. Everything a rambunctious boy wants to do subconsciously, and they just let him do it. Whole model home, available for deconstruction. My favorite is the rough house. It's just a silhouette of this giant mosh pit / brawl of boys. Like, are they not concerned for their safety? There's like broken glass everywhere. Like, ugh. Oh well, it's proof that you can let boys be boys and they won't hurt themselves sometimes.
I beg to differ.
All right.
My brother was in the hospital way more of the times than he should have been.
Pleasure Island. You know what? Something I noticed this time around is that freaking coachman guy, he has these weird creatures under his control. I first saw them when he told them to close the doors and lock them to Pleasure Island. You know what they look like? They look like Heartless from Kingdom Hearts. They're just like these shadow people with white gleaming eyes. And then you see them again stacking up all the crates and herding all the donkey children into their pens.
Poor donkey kids.
This one can still talk. What does he do with the ones that talk?
That was so sad.
Well, I don't know if they just like stick them in that corner until eventually they transform or give them more crazy beer.
Oh, jeez.
It's a crazy racket this guy's got going.
I love when Pinocchio and Lampwick, they're kind of just playing pool, hanging out, doing their thing, and Jiminy Cricket comes in. He's like, Pinocchio! So this is where I find you. How do you expect to be a real boy? Look at yourself. Smoking. Playing pool.
Oh, he's like, so appalled that they're playing billiards.
Yeah, one of the worst vices out there.
I guess it was always seen as a vice because of pool halls in the atmosphere. You know, I can get that, but it just doesn't make sense to me. I love the part where Lampwick starts transforming and he doesn't notice, but Pinocchio sees it happen. And he looks down at his beer, and he just tosses it.
Yeah.
Then he keeps watching, smoking a cigar, and then he keeps watching it. Then he looks down at his cigar and just tosses that away. And then it's scary. It's scary what happens to Lampwick.
Yeah, well, I thought it was awesome how at that point in time they did his full transformation in shadow form.
Ooh.
And I was just like, oh, that's creeper.
His hands are clawing at Pinocchio, you know, begging for help, and they turn into hooves.
Yeah. Well, that'll creep you out. I think that was actually one of those points that, like, freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty positive, you know, it did.
Yeah, I'll never look at a donkey the same way again after this film. Like, were you once a little boy who went to Pleasure Island and started drinking and smoking and carrying on and playing pool? Speak to me. Can you tell me what happened?
I can save you. Just let me know.
Yeah. Do you ever notice how Pinocchio just kind of magically gets rid of his donkey ears and tail? No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He keeps them.
Yeah, until he's transformed back.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They could have just thrown him into the ocean and the fish would have eaten his donkey extras.
Skin. That's so weird. all the weird crap that they wrote back then. Anyway. Yeah, so he finally escapes from Pleasure Island. He has to kind of hit rock bottom, as it were, figuratively, because they clamber up a cliff. It's like, it's the only way, Pinocchio.
Okay, that was a question I had. Is that cliff the same cliff as what the queen from Snow White fell off?
Oh, interesting. Centuries before this very spot, a wicked witch tumbled to her death.
Disney yeah. theory, Disney theory.
Absolutely. Geppetto's related. Yep, Geppetto's related to Mr. Smee, and it's the same cliff as Snow White.
No, honestly, if you watch it, it looks exactly the same. It's like they have to climb up the same rocks, and then they have to fall off.
We'll have to do a shot-by-shot analysis.
Side-by-side, yeah.
I don't think they were to the point where they had to reuse animation stuff to save money, but you never know.
Yeah.
That wasn't until the 70s.
We'll have to check it out. With the dove. Apparently, according to No Strings Attached, not the Unsync album, but the making of featurette for Pinocchio, that was the Blue Fairy taking the form of the dove. And that just makes it a lot more religious than she was in the first place.
It was a plot hole. And I was like, meh. I never really thought twice about it because, I mean, she was a fairy after all.
Well, I saw right through it. The note wasn't written by Geppetto. It's got like gilded gold type on it.
Right. Anyway. So it's like, meh. You just go with it.
Of course, Figaro and Cleo can't tell them where Geppetto went because Geppetto took them with him. He really, really likes that cat and that darn goldfish.
Yeah, exactly.
I was impressed that he took the goldfish, honestly.
Maybe they're, like, too important for him to leave out of his sight, you know. Maybe Figaro, you know, maybe he knows some nuclear launch codes and he's afraid to let him into the wrong hands. And Cleo, like, carries Ebola or something. I don't know. Geppetto's a lot more sinister than we thought. I'm just spouting out ideas for any Disney guy that's, you know, any worker at Disney who might be listening for the live action Pinocchio.
Yes.
And so, of course, they go underwater and they're looking for Monstro, the baddest of the bad.
That underwater sequence is pretty amazing.
Monstro the largest monster in any Disney film? Sheer mass. Can you think of one that's bigger?
The dragon from Sleeping Beauty.
Ooh, the dragon's pretty
Eventually,
big.
Eventually, Ursula becomes quite big.
Yeah, it's true.
She becomes mega Ursula. She reaches her final form.
I think she's the only one that really comes.
All right. So Monstro is definitely up there with the heavyweights. I think Monstro is a boss in Kingdom Hearts.
Really?
Of course.
Yeah, I think so. I sometimes peruse the Wikipedia, the Disney villains Wikia.
Uh-huh.
And they had pretty good comprehensive profiles on all the characters. And of course, if they ever appeared in one of the Kingdom Hearts games, they show their in-game sprite character, you know, and, they describe, you know, the battles that Sora and the gang have to go against and stuff, you know. So anyway, Monstro is amazing.
Yes.
Like, that's probably the only thing I'd be interested in actually seeing in the live-action version. Like, please don't mess up Monstro. There was this this trailer that came out that was, like, kind of a proof of concept for this movie called Leviathan, and it's literally Moby Dick in space.
Nice.
Where these mining crews are mining, like, an energy source off of, and they're harvesting them from these giant leviathans, and they're literally space whales. So if they pull off something like that for Monstro, depends on who's directing it. If it's like Tim Burton or something, then he can, you know, really up the imagination as far as design. But just make Monstro huge and scary, please. You know, Geppetto's in there. He's been swallowed up, and he's like poor Pinocchio. He was such a good boy. Yeah, for like 5 minutes. You don't know him like we know him.
You haven't seen the other side of this Pinocchio. He does not listen. He does not do anything that he's told. Yeah. He lies.
He lies.
The lies.
But, I like the underwater sequence.
Yeah. I mean, it was just crazy. The technical feats are, my goodness. Just the way you could totally tell it's underwater. Just amazing.
Yep.
I mean, all I can say is wow, is when they're like swimming away from Monstro, you look at the cells on Geppetto and he just looks so real. He just looks so fleshed out and detailed. It's just amazing. And I just think, you know, there were several teams working on just the water in the waves.
Special effects. When Monstro's going after him and all that water is splashing around.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing. Really cool. That was masterminded by an artist named Josh Metter, I think. And, he was just like a machine turning up this water splashing. And it doesn't have to be realistic.
Mm-mm.
That's the thing about, special effects. I read about this in my sci-fi class, is that they don't have to be rational, but they have to appeal to your common sense. You have to be able to look at it and be like, oh yeah, that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's a very, very interesting achievement if you can get the audience to get into that zone, you know? But yeah. Excellent. Like, when Monstro just crashes down on this, the whole screen just covers with water. I think at some points, like, they try to simulate the water hitting the camera and just splashing in front of it and all sorts of stuff. Like, when it crashes up against the rock when they're trying to get into that little grotto. And then, of course, the sea, like, seafoam receding after Geppetto gets washed ashore. It's just, like, I can't even begin to think about how they animated that. So many, like, layers and the timing of it all. And my goodness.
Very, very carefully. That's how.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's how we spent $2 million.
Yeah.
Well, heck, you know. But, yeah, it just goes to show you that, in all, this film is just artful. Like, it's just, it really showcases the animation art and what it could do. Does it have its flaws? Yeah, like the story's kind of wacky, you know, and a little disjointed at times, but man, the art form is just, it doesn't need to be streamlined and clean and crisp, because it's like you're looking at a handcrafted work of art that's constantly moving in front of you. And that's something you don't see in a lot of animated films. They got very serialized, you know, back in the early days. And this one, Pinocchio, definitely stands out as like a massive achievement of the art of animation.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why the cover, you know, the slip cover of the book, The Illusion of Life, which is pretty much the encyclopedia on Disney animation, it features a layout and a bunch of animation cells of Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they cite that movie a lot in The Illusion of Life.
I need to get my hands on a copy of that book. I've read parts
of
it.
Wow, I can't believe I have an art book that you don't.
Yes, I am the connoisseur. I'm the collector. Which, isn't that, yeah, that's a character in Kung Fu Panda 3, I believe. Maybe not.
Ah, the collector.
Maybe.
We'll see more of them.
Anyways, we'll find out next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, we end, and Pinocchio is turned into a real boy.
I'm a real boy!
Not that Pinocchio.
5 shillings for the possessed toy. Take him away. Oh, Shrek. Yeah, the ending is very abrupt, and it does not match. It does not match the energy and peril of the climax of the film, which is, you know, of course, Monstro attacking them. I feel bad about the ending. It's just like, hey, let's dance around my living room. And you know, that's it. And tomorrow you're going to school.
What?
You know, all this ends and then the guy from Arrested Development comes on and that's why you don't skip school.
You know, he was super naughty and naive for like 95% of the film, and he does a good thing. He saves the dad. It's great, but
he shows that he's brave and kind and the other thing.
I feel like he has to prove himself a few more times to see if this was something that would stick. Is this just a one-time thing or you've truly changed? But hey, she knows his heart, so.
You know what's interesting about this film? Is that none of the villains become defeated in this film. Honest John is still out there. The coachman is still out there.
It's true.
Monstro is still out there swimming
sequel
around somewhere.
Time! How did they not see this as the perfect opening for a sequel?
The only one, I know, right? The only one who does get destroyed is Pinocchio's former naive, disobedient self. Hopefully. But he could come back at any time.
That is the true story of these times. Man versus self, as opposed to man versus man or man versus nature. Man versus self.
Or man versus robot. My personal favorite.
We never
or
have a
man
chance.
Versus Godzilla. And we all know how that ends. Anyway, what did y'all think of the ending? I thought it was too abrupt and kind of silly.
It didn't have me emotionally is the thing. And that was probably the main issue I had with this film growing up and why it didn't have a lot of replay value. Yeah, you got it, and you understood that, you know, the lesson that they were trying to teach and everything, but it just didn't get you emotionally.
Yeah.
I personally thought that child boy Pinocchio was kind of creepy.
Man child.
Yeah. I feel like his design, I don't know, maybe just because it is so abrupt, but I just like, oh, I don't really like you as a boy. Go back, go back.
It's like when Beast turns into a man, you just want him to
turns
go back
to Stefan. Yeah. Oh, well. That's why he goes back to the Beast and all the, you know, offshoot.
Yeah.
So before we rate it, I asked our listeners on Facebook and Twitter, in your opinion, why is Pinocchio considered an animated masterpiece? So some of our answers on Facebook were from Suzanne. She says, because all the legends that worked on it and the flawless classic animation. Rodrigo says, first feature animation to have all the animation principles, expansive backgrounds, and lots of money for development. Lots.
Hello.
Another Suzanne Marie King says, because it is animation in its most perfect state. Every bit of the movie fits flawlessly together. The direction, the design, the story, the characters all weave together flawlessly. The emotion brought by its daring and still frightening subject matter pushed the medium as far as it could go. Asha says, because of the quirky, beautiful, exquisitely detailed score that acts as music, sound effects, and a vital storytelling device all rolled into one. Okay, there are about 1,000 other reasons I could cite, but this one never gets enough credit, in my opinion. A few more. Zachary Miller says, when you wish upon a star, what else do I need to say? Frank Foster, the characters, I would say, is a major reason. They remain timeless along with the story. Gemma says, so many firsts in animation and technology. Masterful artwork on screen the whole time. Frank Morris says, it's a real joy. And lastly, Tim Tran says, everything of the film is done to almost perfection. Iconic scenes and music, iconic characters, terrifying villains, the best 2D animation, the themes and its terrifying subject matter are relevant in any era and teach people major lessons, perfect direction and storytelling and lighting, perfect voice work, haunting imagery, still one of the greatest films that pushes through family-friendly boundary into American animation. So I would say people love this film and people really appreciate its artistry and direction and everything about it.
Yeah, absolutely. The vote is unanimous.
So what do you rate it?
Dang. All right. Rating it. Do I give it 5 stars? No. I still like Lion King more than this one. Oh, it'll never compare. But can Pinocchio go up there with Lion King as a 5-star animated film? 4.5 stars. I feel bad rating it 5 stars. My reason being is that the story just does not wrap up well for me. I wished his nose thing would have been more of a factor in the story. But as far as the artwork, like, how can I ever criticize it, you know, or vote it low? 4.5 stars, Pinocchio.
So I'm going to give it also 4.5 stars. I think this movie isn't necessarily one that I would be gravitated to watch all the time. However, every time that I do watch it, I really enjoy it. And just like all those, everyone on the Facebook page had said, it's just masterfully done. The backgrounds, the voice acting, the characters. Someone else on Twitter had mentioned how every single one of these characters is enjoyable and relatable. And even the bad guys and the good guys, they're all very pleasing. And I think that was true. Every character was great. And I think just because what this did for animation as a whole and for the studio, it was also one of the films, you know, preserved by the Library of Congress. It's just so timeless. I could watch it anytime and really love it. So 4.5.
I also give it 4.5 stars, for all the same reasons you guys put out, but also just like it was hard for me, like I said, to get emotionally involved with this, but it was aesthetically a gem and something that you're really able to just appreciate, even, you know, as you get older and everything. But as a kid, I just remember watching this. I think I've probably watched this maybe 5 times, even though we've had it, you know, we had the VHS from way back when. So I obviously had many opportunities to watch it, but yeah, it wasn't one that I would go back to for those reasons. But like everybody has mentioned, and as we've talked about multiple times, it is gorgeous and a feat in animation.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through one reach upon the star. Your dreams come true.
so now we are going to go into our voicemails. This is where you, the listeners, get to provide your feedback, your thoughts, your reviews of the movies that we are covering here. Our first voicemail is from Mark.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, Chelsea, it's Mark. Just calling because I heard you guys doing Pinocchio as your next podcast, so I'm really excited for that. Pinocchio is my second favorite film in the animated Disney canon. Yeah, like I said, I'm excited. My question that I have for you is that in 2000, Disney made like a TV musical film called Geppetto, which kind of like retold the story of Pinocchio, but from like Geppetto's point of view, with, you know, Drew Carey and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Usher, etc. So my question is, have you all seen this film? And if so, what did you think about it?
Yeah. I remember seeing it when it aired, but I don't remember much of it, and I have no desire to see it again.
I remember the marketing.
What was it about?
Geppetto.
Just from Geppetto's point of view?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it was a musical, I remember, and it had a lot of big names in it. But yeah, it wasn't something I was... It just had an off-putting feeling to me, and I never watched it.
It doesn't have good reviews anywhere, basically. Let's not talk about it. To the next email. Our next one is from Sarah.
Hi, Lotus Clippers. It's me, Sarah, again. First, I'm going to give y'all a quick story of Pinocchio, which I love. Actually, I was in the production of Pinocchio. I played Jiminy Cricket. True story. I haven't watched this movie in a long time, but I have very fond memories of it. I'm pretty sure that this was one of the movies that I borrowed from someone and never gave back. But it's a classic, and I have a very soft spot for this movie, and I can't wait to hear what you guys think about it. I'm not so excited for the remake, though. I'm not, like, against it, but I'm not like, woo! Yay! Anywho, and you guys had a lot of conundrums in the Watership Down that said that I thought I might be able to answer. First off, I think it was Morgan that said she didn't understand a lot of names in the opening sequence with Ella Herrera. Yes, that's how you pronounce his name, which I only know because it was in the Tale from Watership Down book, which I don't recommend so much. It wasn't very good. That's Ella Herrera, which I pronounced completely wrong in the movie. They're like, Also, apparently in London, a couple of years ago, there was a stage production of Watership Down, and it looked weird. I'm going to be doing a Watership Down-themed video on my page, The Master's Domain. Anywho, I can't wait for your review of Pinocchio. I hope you guys have a great day. Bye, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. I love you guys a whole lot, and have a great day. Bye.
Good day to you, Rotoscopers family. Ryan Prieto here with my review for Disney's Pinocchio, Disney's hardest-to-spell animated classic. This movie provided so much entertainment for me as a child. It taught me a couple things. One, never trust an Italian gypsy. Two, whales are an uncornered real estate market. And three, people who worry about young, impressionable minds are way off base. This movie contains children getting drunk, smoking, gambling, and vandalizing. I watched this movie all throughout my childhood, and I barely gambled anymore. Keep in mind, I'm 26. All in all, this animation was amazing. And that being accompanied with the unforgettable When You Wish Upon a Star really helps a youthful mind from focusing on the crazy voodoo of having children transmuted into a beast of burden. Oh, and that kiss between Figaro and Madame Cleofish was animation genius. Disney was breaking down barriers long before we knew it. And I can't tell you how many times I've backflipped into a source of water just for a kiss. I give this movie 4 can-cans out of 5. And if I could just suggest something to make the show a little bit better, Chelsea, more Thunder Tube. I love that thing, which is why The Incredibles is probably my favorite episode, because it's so Thunder Tube heavy. But I got a fever, and the only cure is more cowbell. Oh, okay. And, Mason, if you could impersonate Christopher Walken, that'd be really cool. All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay, so our last one is from Mark again.
Uh-oh, doubleheader.
Hey, Morgan, Mason, and Chelsea. This is Mark. I'm just calling. I have a question for you guys. Not really particular to any particular podcast, but just a general question. I was wondering, do you guys think that Walt Disney Studios will ever go bankrupt? Do you ever believe there will be a time where Disney will cease to exist? I mean, we know in the past there have been many animation companies and film companies who have come up and they've made films and they've died out eventually. But it seems to me, and even in Disney's own history, we've seen where they have been, you know, at the brink of going bankrupt, but then, you know, got success after. So the thought just came to me like a couple weeks ago, and I was thinking about, do you ever think that Disney will ever, like I said, cease to exist? I mean, for me, that's a very, like, scary thing. I just can't imagine a world without Disney. So, yeah, do you ever think Disney will ever cease to exist? And if so, do you think this would be in our lifetime or, like, in a few generations later? Looking forward to hearing what you have to say. See ya. Bye.
All right, so he's talking about Disney, and, you know, there were times where Disney almost went bankrupt. There have been lots of studios, I think of Filmation, Animation, Don Bluth Studios even, that just don't exist anymore. So do you think that any of these big studios, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, will ever go bankrupt and disappear?
Well, let's start with Disney. No, that one is here to stay. Disney films have like the biggest captive audience besides Star Wars, which, oh, is now owned by Disney. So that is so meta, and they will never lose viewership.
Well, what about the
animation
side?
Nor will they go
side?
Bankrupt. Oh, the animation side?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, they'll keep making animated films.
They almost stopped.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to make that mistake anymore, but it would be tempting to not focus that much on your animation when you've got such mega franchises as Star Wars and the entire Marvel universe. Well, not entire, but they're starting to gulp down the rest of the of the IPs that are left to other studios.
Yeah.
No. Disney's here to stay. Nothing's ever going to happen to it. It sure as heck can't go bankrupt from legal trouble because it's invincible. Along with the other major studios in California, of course, they will never be sued out of their money. They're too giant. I know people like to stir things up with the whole DreamWorks thing, like, oh, could they be finished once and for all? You know, just because a studio is going through a hard point doesn't mean it won't bounce back.
Honestly, I think I would like to disagree, and I would just say that it is only dependent on the type of leadership that they have. For example, many of the other studios that have gone, and I'm thinking mostly in the smaller studios where it's like one head guy, if it doesn't have the leadership to continue past the vision of one person, it's gonna stop. So that's one thing, like, that Disney does have. They have a really great way of building up other leaders around them. And so, especially over the years, like, and then I think that people and leaders are driven to those types of opportunities and those types of businesses so that they can continue. But if they don't have that, then it is going to slow down, and it's going to end up not having the same stamina as when it does have a leader that's really pushing it forward.
Yeah. I think these big studios are here to stay. The only reason they would become obsolete is if some other studio, like, rose up, took all their talent away from them, and and innovated in the technical aspects of animation and just brought it to a whole new level, and leaving all the other ones behind. And that's just not going to happen. I mean, you can't even poach animators from those studios. But anyway. That was a way longer answer than I was planning to give, Mark. But no, not in our lifetimes.
So what is up with all these live action remakes?
This is where I think Disney is doing some pretty poor management. Of course, I better watch what I say. I could be working on one of these films in the future. But why?
Because it makes money.
You're right, you know? People make Disney out to be this, like, benevolent, angelic, like, it's like if Steve Jobs, if it was like, the Earth's population's perception of Steve Jobs was embodied in an animation studio as this, like, angelic, amazing powerhouse that could never do anything wrong. That's Disney Studios. And you know what? Disney plays the game, plays the money game, just like everyone else who's trying to capitalize on their property. And as long as people don't refuse to go and spend ticket money on it, it's going to keep coming. Like I said it on Twitter, if you want these remakes and these reboots and these mindless sequels to stop, don't give them your ticket money. Don't give them your Redbox money or your rental money for Amazon, because that means you're just supporting what they're doing, and they'll see the money that they've made and they'll make more. I'm making Disney look like this like horrible studio, but they're not, of course. You know, I mean, we know Disney, but I am confused and I'm kind of disappointed with all these live action Disney remakes. But it's like Morgan said, they make money, so who's to stop them?
So of the past remakes, I mean, this isn't a new thing at all. I mean, we had like the Jungle Book from 1994, 101 Dalmatians, which honestly I thought was a great,
great
success.
One, yeah.
Excellent villain mate. yeah, as mentioned before, you had Geppetto and then Alice in Wonderland, which was, you know, not
that
too
one
long
was
ago.
Cute.
I wasn't a fan. Then Maleficent, which, you know, to some it's awesome.
Not a fan.
And to others, we're not fans. and then Cinderella, which just came out, which I am a huge fan of. I loved that movie. So, you know, it just depends on how they do it for me.
Yeah, what do we got now? We got Alice in Wonderland, but now there's a sequel coming out, right?
Right.
Then we got Dumbo, Mulan, okay. Winnie the Pooh, how are they going to do that?
We shall see.
It's just going to turn out to be Ted 3. And then, and now Pinocchio, but, and also Ultron, you know, and then, Pizza Dragon, Beauty and the Beast, of course. Ewan McGregor just got, cast as Lumiere. So
I love
that's
Ewan
okay.
McGregor.
I think I love Lumiere better. But,
I always think of Moulin Rouge book. When I think of him and singing. So I'm like, I just love that movie. Anyway.
Yeah, Ewan McGregor's pretty good. He was a great Obi-Wan.
You know, going about this, you know, talking about these remakes, this isn't a new thing for Disney. Like Chelsea said, they have done remakes since, you know, the 90s. Like, you
it's
know,
not,
junk-
but the sheer volume. Now.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. If Disney had spaced these announcements out instead of doing maybe 4 or 5 within a month, I don't think we would have known if they did this every 6 months, they announced a new one and then, you know, some other films announced as well that are non-remakes. But the fact that the only thing they seem to be announcing at this point in time are remakes is making people very frightened. What is going on? What is the studio thinking? This is a bad idea. And I think it was just, like Mason said, sheer volume and timing. If they would have spaced this out a little bit, I think we would have not have had this reaction.
Well, I mean, 5 years ago, in general, we would have never believed the sheer amount of volume that is coming from all entertainment outlets now. I mean, just plug in, just turn on Hulu or Netflix, you know, it's like every month there's a new Netflix original series out. You know, all these movies are coming out. You know, indie filmmaking is healthy and it's thriving. And there's just so much content to choose from. It's insane. It's almost overwhelming. But anyway, this is just part of Disney's strategy. It's you know, they know that people will go spend their money on this.
Mm-hmm.
I will keep doing my silent protest against them, but of course I will see the Marvel movies and the Star Wars movies. They don't have to worry about that.
But, you start to slide, give a little whistle. Give a little whistle. And always let your conscience be your guide.
So much for joining us for yet another exciting episode of the Animation Addicts podcast as we were talking about Pinocchio today. If you're wanting to get any of the show notes, head on over to rotoscopers.com/93. If you're looking to download, you know, the movie, if you want to go to and download the soundtrack or even see any of the notes that we were talking about, and Morgan's Instagram and all those fun things, head on over to rotoscopers.com/93. And then also be sure to leave us a comments and tell us what you thought of Pinocchio, what you thought of the podcast, anything that you'd like to add. We loved hearing from you guys and we love to kind of talk with you guys back and forth. Also, if you want to tweet about this episode, make sure to use the hashtag AnimAddicts. And then if you want to tweet about this specific episode, do hashtag AnimAddicts93. We love being able to talk with you guys on Twitter and get the tweets going. As once mentioned before, also you can head on to DisneyQuotes.com if you want to find out any of the fantastic quotes. If you're like, hey, who said that? Or, hey, what is my favorite quote from Bambi? DisneyQuotes.com has it for you. And also, thank you so much once again to our fantastic fans who were able to send in voicemails. If you want to get on the show, we want to hear your voicemails. Honestly, like, we've made some of our best friends from hearing you guys on the show. It's really hard for us to, like, see you guys as real people until we hear your voices. It's like, it's so much better than just like a thumbnail. So please, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to call us, give us a call at 606-646-6575. Or you can just go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails. Also, if you want to support the show, you can head on over to rotoscopers.com/Amazon, rotoscopers.com/Audible for all of your audiobooks. We also have a store and some amazing t-shirts that you definitely want to try out. Morgan and I wear our t-shirts all the time. Mason loves his as well. We've got a sidebar on the website as well. You can see other fans who have purchased their t-shirts and are showing them off with pride. If you go to iTunes, you're able to download this episode if you found us on the website, or you can also find us on Stitcher Radio. Both of those are excellent sources, and make sure to give us a like or comment. Like, for example, on iTunes, if you give us a comment, then that also helps us be found in the iTunes world. Like, nobody knows how it works, but we do know that comments and, you know, people rating us, it does help. And also, we do want to give a shout out to the latest people who have actually been so kind and given us 5-star reviews. We have Seashores, Mr. Bearcat, Casey Nicole 88, at DGESKE, and then we've got iMagic 12, KKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKKK thank you so much for your so many kind words. Like, really, it was really nice of you guys and touching, and it makes us feel really great and happy that we're able to give you guys a little bit of value into your day. It really makes us, you know, fulfills us a bit. Also, you can find us anytime on hypeable.com and Animated Views and social media and all forms, like we were talking about, our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, basically anything. Also, Periscope, as Morgan has tried to show you her side of the podcasting world. We just started a newsletter too, so do not forget to subscribe to that. Go to rotoscopers.com/newsletter and you will be the first to know about everything that comes your way. Every little thing that is new and exciting in the Rotoscopers world, you will be the first to know and you will never miss an update. You can also visit us at our individual locations. Morgan Stradling on Twitter and Instagram. You can find myself, Chelsea Robson, on Twitter and Instagram as well. Also, Morgan has just added a Snapchat. So if you want to follow her, that one's a fun place to go. I would get on Snapchat, but I don't know how it works. These things are so new to me. Mason, you can find him at MasonSMTX. You can also find him on MasonSmithPortfolio.com and thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com.
Our next episode is The Brave Little Toaster. This is a very interesting film. John Lasseter had his hands on this film. Yeah, we're going from a masterpiece to a masterpiece in some people's minds.
But it's a stepping stone.
It'll be great. So check it out. Definitely watch it beforehand. Use our Amazon links to rent it before so you can. That's what we do. Chelsea and I, Mason, we rent the video and we just watch it on Amazon. It's a great way to watch the film before the podcast. So check it out. Get ready. It's going to be good. It seems like every episode we have fur's going to fly. And this one, it's sparks going to fly. All right, guys, until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
What kind of computer is it?
Well, it's a desktop. I picked out my motherboard, my video card. My video card is so powerful, it's named after an Egyptian god.
See, and I'm...
The Ra. I'm just kidding. It's just a minor god. It could never match up to Ra. What takes my laptop 36 minutes to render now takes 3 or 4 minutes on my desktop.
Oh, that's fantastic.
To render.
Whoa.
I know, I feel so powerful.
So powerful.
You know what I do to break my voice so that I have like a nicer like a nicer voice. I sing Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen at the top of my lungs. It like breaks it so that
you know all the tricks. So Pinocchio was actually, hold on, I have like 40 tabs and the one I'm looking for is missing. Where are you?
Everybody freeze. We have a missing tab.
Gotcha.
Okay, look around you. Do you see the tab?
It's silver. People used to put them on necklaces. Oh. They're found on soda cans.
Am I supposed to go?
Oh, that's usually what awkward pauses mean.
Yeah, it means Chelsea's supposed to say something.
Morgan, is your mic muted or something?
No, sorry. So there's this new.
I didn't know if we were going to have one of those this episode.
There's this new app called Periscope where basically you live stream anything that's going on. And I just did a Periscope, but it's not cool to live stream a podcast where you can only hear me. And so I was like doing the Periscope, but basically it live streams it and it doesn't record the video. So like people have to tune in and I had like 26 people tuning in and I was like, what's happening? But then I was like, this is really boring because Mason and Chelsea are talking. So I was trying to do like screenshots of like my screens and then I was trying to like turn it off. So that's why I haven't been talking for the past like 5 minutes. Cause I was like,
oh, that's fine. But that's our plug for Periscope.
Periscope the next one so people can hear all three of our conversations.
And they have to tune in all at the same time?
Yeah.
To all three.
Yes, they can actually hear.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Because, yeah, you guys were talking and it wasn't my turn to talk and I was just like, wow, I picked the worst time to start my Periscope because I'm not talking.
Yeah.
That's why I was interjecting about Strumpoli's butt and stuff like that.
I don't think my phone could handle something like that, but yeah, that'd be cool. I want to live stream my life.
Check it out.
Force everyone to check it out.
Follow. So, anyways.
Follow for a follow? Anyway. All right. Do you want me to just start over then?
No.
Okay.
So, Thundertube it.